Iran's security chief says the United States' increased military activities in West Asia stems from Washington's fear of the consequences of its past acts of mischief. Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Shtayyeh calls on the international community to stop Israel's settlement plans in the occupied Palestinian territories. Also ahead, South Africa tightens COVID-19 restrictions, extending a nationwide curfew as infections surpass the 1 million mark in the country. It's good to have you with us. Our top story this hour, the Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council says the U.S. Army has increased its activities in West Asia out of fear of the consequences of Washington's past mischievous acts. Ali Shamkhani added that security and stability in West Asia will not be achieved unless American forces leave the region. A week ago, the U.S. Navy announced the arrival of a nuclear-powered submarine in the Persian Gulf accompanied by two warships. The U.S. has increased its military presence in the region as the anniversary of the assassination of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani is approaching. Washington fears Iran might again strike U.S. forces in retaliation for Soleimani's assassination. Iran has time and again said it does not want to initiate a conflict but will not hesitate to defend itself in the face of any U.S. aggression. Former U.S. Army officer Scott Bennett says Zionist-controlled military-industrial complexes seek a false flag attack in the Persian Gulf to divert attention from the unfolding civil war in the United States.
I think the military-industrial complex Zionists, as they have in the past, are trying to deceive President Trump and trying to amplify and exaggerate the situation and the tensions to possibly launch some sort of a false flag attack or try and trigger a conflict in the Persian Gulf against Iran to distract people away from the unfolding civil war in the United States, which is going to begin rapidly increasing after January 6th, when President Trump exposes the Chinese Communist Party and the election meddling and the fraud and the false flag attacks that were done in the United States. That is the real tension. So any trying to draw Iran in or blame Iran for kinetic operations or say Iran's a danger, I think is a distraction away from the real wars in America.
The Palestinian Prime Minister has called on the international community to put an end to the Israeli regime's settlement plans in the occupied territories. Mohammed Shtayyeh called on the world to embrace U.S. Security Council Resolution 2334, which denounces Israeli colonial projects. The Premier also urged the UN to set up teams with a mission to protect the Palestinian people in the occupied West Bank villages from settler attacks. Shtayyeh also said that Israel's new plans show a flagrant disregard for the international position that opposes the settlements. Israel has driven up its settlement activities and the demolition of Palestinian homes in recent years with the backing of the United States. The regime's expansionist agenda has repeatedly been denounced by rights organizations. People in the Gaza Strip say they will never forget the sacrifices made by the Iranian top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated by the U.S. 1 year ago. General Soleimani was among the main supporters of the Palestinian people's struggle for freedom and justice. Ashraf Shannon has more in this report.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have expressed gratitude to Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani 1 year after his assassination by U.S. forces in the Iraqi capital Baghdad. Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani played a major role in strengthening Palestinian resistance movements against the Israeli regime.
We commemorate the first anniversary of the martyrdom of the great commander Haj Qasem Soleimani, who died for the sake of Jerusalem al-Quds. This anniversary comes amid great pressures on the resistance in the region. On this occasion, we vow to follow in the footsteps of the commander to liberate Palestine.
Following the assassination of General Soleimani, Palestinians held several events to pay tribute to the late Iranian commander. They considered him as a hero for Palestine and Jerusalem al-Quds.
On the anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, we express our great gratitude for sacrifices he made for the sake of oppressed Palestinians.
The assassination of General Soleimani on Donald Trump's orders has sent shockwaves across the West Asia. Soleimani's memory continues to live in the hearts and minds of Palestinians in the blockaded Gaza Strip.
Palestinians will continue to remain steadfast and condemn the treason by some Arab countries that have normalized ties with the Zionist regime. On this occasion, Palestinians also vow to fight the occupation until regaining their freedom.
Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was assassinated in a U.S. airstrike on January 3rd.
Palestinians say martyr Qasem Soleimani has sacrificed his life for the sake of Palestine and Jerusalem al-Quds and has always supported Palestinian resistance against the Zionist regime. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
As we are getting closer to the first anniversary of the assassination of Iran's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, by the US and Iraq, people have begun to hold ceremonies to pay tribute to him. Our correspondent Human Abedi has attended one of these events in the holy city of Qom.
Ahead of the first anniversary of the assassination of the former commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, General Qasem Soleimani, people are now holding commemoration ceremonies to pay respect to this late Iranian icon. We went to the city of Qom, where a movement called Resistance Youth Front is formed to support the cause of General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, who defeated the ominous phenomenon of Daesh. Scholars, youth, activists, and resistance movement supporters from countries like Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and India attended the ceremony to tell the world that General Soleimani's cause will not be forgotten.
It's a great pleasure for all of us, for all the people of the world who are free, who just think freely, okay? So such kind of attribution actually led us to not only memorize or recall their memory, actually also to follow their path. That is the path of humanity. That is the real war on terror, war against terror.
Shahid Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, they fight for saving the life of all mankind, of all Muslim and non-Muslim.
General Qasem Soleimani was assassinated by a U.S. strike on January 3rd last year when he was on an official visit to the Iraqi capital Baghdad. Hitting his convoy, the assault also led to the death of many others, including Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, deputy commander of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Units, or Hashd al-Shaabi. Apart from this ceremony held here, within the coming days, a number of other events will be held across Iran under health protocols to pay tribute to General Qasem Soleimani. Human Abedi, Qom.
So, January the 3rd marks the first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Iran's top general Qasem Soleimani. A number of Iranian lawmakers explain how Soleimani played a key role in the fight against terrorism.
I think everybody on the international stage is indebted to General Soleimani. He rendered a great service to humanity by standing against the richest, most powerful and largely equipped terrorists in the region, who are being funded by the U.S. and the Israeli regime. These terrorists were not only endangering regional security, but also were posing big threats to European countries. So General Soleimani played a huge role in the fight against terrorism worldwide.
The absence of General Soleimani is largely felt within the resistance front and in the fight against terrorism, at the top of which is criminal youth. Unfortunately, we lost General Soleimani, but his great goal of creating a united resistance front still prevails. His martyrdom made us more determined to follow his goals in all fields.
Today, people in many countries from Iraq to Yemen are facing acts of terrorism. There was a need for someone who could have had an international approach to safeguarding security. General Soleimani was the only person who was able to manage all those operations.
Sardar Soleimani.
General Soleimani is regarded as the international face of resistance. He's as well known in Islamic countries as he is within his own nation. Today, all the oppressed nations of the world remember General Soleimani as the symbol of resistance, sacrifice, and endeavor.
Elsewhere, South Africa has imposed new nationwide restrictions amid the rising number of coronavirus cases and a variant of the disease recently detected in the country. The government has ordered a total ban on alcohol sales and the cancellation of events while making mask wearing mandatory in public. The restrictions follow a steep rise in COVID infections that have pushed the country's total caseload to over 1 million. South Africa is now the worst hit country on the continent in terms of infections. It has also recorded nearly 27,000 deaths so far. The discovery of a new COVID variant has prompted many countries, including Britain and Germany, to ban flights to and from South Africa. Meanwhile, a WHO official has said the planet should be ready for even more lethal infections.
And I will say one thing. That may come as a shock to people. This pandemic has been very severe. It's spread around the world extremely quickly. It has affected every corner of this planet. But this is not necessarily the big one. This virus is very transmissible, and it kills people, and it has deprived so many people of loved ones. But its current case fatality is reasonably low in comparison to other emerging diseases.
The WHO Health Emergencies Executive Director also warned that emerging diseases have much fatality risk. The COVID-19 pandemic has claimed over 1.7 million lives globally and infected over 81 million people. Over the past couple of weeks, several nations, including Britain, Russia, the US, Canada, Mexico and Chile, have begun vaccinating their citizens with COVID-19 vaccines. More countries are now following suit or are in the process of purchasing coronavirus vaccines to launch vaccination programs. An explosion has claimed the lives of three French soldiers during an operation in southern Mali. A statement from the French presidency says the troops died after an improvised explosive device hit their armored vehicle in the Hombori region. They were part of France's military operations in the West African nation. The fatalities bring to 47 the number of French troops killed since their deployment to Mali in 2013. Over 5,000 French troops are currently in the Sahel region to help fight militants alongside soldiers from several African countries. Bangladesh has begun relocating another batch of Myanmar's Rohingya refugees to a remote island in the Bay of Bengal, despite objections from rights groups. Earlier, we discussed the issue in detail with our guests in the News Review program. Bangladesh has begun moving a second group of Muslim refugees to a remote island in the Bay of Bengal, despite objections from rights groups. Nearly 1,000 Rohingya refugees are in the second batch to be sent to Bashan Char. Bangladeshi Foreign Minister Abdul Momin claimed Rohingya refugees are voluntarily going to what he called a beautiful resort. Dhaka wants to gradually relocate 100,000 Rohingya to the island from overcrowded camps that host about 1 million Muslim refugees from Myanmar. But rights groups say that the refugees are being coerced and intimidated to move to the isolated territory. Rohingya Muslims were forced to take refuge in Bangladesh after a brutal army crackdown in neighboring Myanmar. Joining us is Ney San Luin from the Free Rohingya Coalition. He's a coordinator there and from the German city of Frankfurt. And we also have Jahangir Mohammed, the director at the Center for Muslim Affairs from the British city of Manchester. Gentlemen, welcome. Nay San Luin, if I can start with you. Bangladesh says the transfer is being conducted on a volunteer basis and the resort is beautiful. Human rights groups beg to differ. What do you say?
Yeah, according to the Bangladeshi local media, it is not about the nearly 1,000, it is nearly 2,000. The exact figure is 1,762 from 428 families. The Bangladesh government has been saying that they are going there voluntarily, but according to the camp report, being I am a Rohingya and an activist, I have contact with my fellow Rohingya brother and sister who are in the Bangladeshi camp. The ground report do not suggest, as Bangladeshi government claim. Most of them were forced by the local authority to go to the Bahasanchar. Today they were transported to the port city of the Chittagong. There they will they are already there now. In the morning they will be taken to the Bahasanchar by the naval ship. So in the first batch also, we have got a lot of report from the ground that most of them were forced by the local authority. This is what we heard from the ground, but completely different with the Bangladesh government report. But there are some people, yes, since the living condition is good in the Bahasanchar, some are voluntarily going in, but most right. of them forced.
Okay. Now, Jahangir, Bangladesh has not coordinated this mass transfer of refugees with the UN Refugee Agency. It's a unilateral decision. How concerning is that?
Well, I think the whole situation is concerning. These people have been refugees for some time, and their situation and their plight has not been resolved. So, in a way, both the United Nations and the Bangladeshi government and international community are to blame for this. It's highly unlikely that people will want to refugees who are poor, who don't have resources, don't really have free will, will move from the mainland to an isolated island. At least on the mainland they can move around and get to other places. This just basically, like dumping them in the sea and saying we're just getting rid of this problem. The UN Refugee Agency hasn't done anything really about their plight, the world has just totally forgot about their plight,
right.
And just leaves them there. So there's no solution in sight to this. Everybody talks about it, but there's no concerted action or plan of action to return them back home, or to create the conditions back home for them to be returned, or to resettle them permanently elsewhere.
I'm afraid we have run out of time. Let's thank our guest, Nay San Luin from the Free Rohingya Coalition. He's a coordinator out of Frankfurt. And we also have Jahangir Mohammed, the director at the Center for Muslim Affairs out of Manchester. Turning elsewhere now, officials in the U.S. city of Columbus have announced the dismissal of a white police officer who fatally shot an unarmed black man last week. The Columbus City Police Chief said the evidence provided solid rationale for the officer Adam Coy's termination. The incident unfolded on Tuesday after officers responded to a non-emergency complaint about a man turning a car on and off for an extended period. Shortly after the officers arrived, the victim, identified as Andre Maurice Hill, approached them on foot with his left hand holding a cell phone. Body camera footage shows the officer shot Hill less than 10 seconds after finding him in a garage. The incident comes as anger boils in the US over police brutality against the African Americans. Well, that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en. From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, close up, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Bazaar was. Though, fortunately, I could do all the week's shoppings. Well, pumpkins for making dessert. Pears. Save pomegranates. The delicious Lirvan cheese. Sangak bread. Oh, and these beautiful daffodils. The fragrance of daffodils overwhelms me. Today we are going to Behbahan. Behbahan is one of the major hubs of daffodils in Iran. Behbahan is a city in Khuzestan province. This city lies in southwestern Iran. Behbahan is located in a plain and in proximity of Zagros mountain range. Behbahan is home to rare species of animals and plants. Daffodil meadows of Behbahan are one of the charming beauties of Iran. Different types of daffodils are discovered in the meadows, including trumpet daffodil and double daffodil. Every year, wonderful festivals of daffodil flowers are held in the daffodil fields of Behbahan. I am now in Behbahan. Behbahan has a really pleasant weather at this time of the year. Now I've left my hotel and I'm waiting for the taxi, which is going to take me to one of the beautiful daffodil fields of Behbahan. I am now in one of the daffodil fields of Behbahan. Wow! The fragrance of daffodils makes me crazy.
I'm not able to describe all these beauties. There are daffodils as much as the eyes could see. And their fragrance. Wow. Daffodil is a genus of perennial bulbous plants. A perennial plant is a plant that lives and blooms more than 2 years, every year with bigger blooms. The bloom and the stem of daffodil is not poisonous, but its bulb is very poisonous. Ah, look at this flower. These delicate white and orange petals. This flower is heavenly. I am now in part of a daffodil field where buckets of picked daffodils are placed orderly. I would like to buy the biggest and most beautiful bucket for myself and take it to the hotel. All the daffodil buckets here are big and beautiful. It's very difficult to choose.
Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
IRIB English radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners, dear brothers and sisters. This is Viewpoints, an analysis on the thoughts and speeches of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. With me in the studio are two experts from the Islamic House of Qom, Brother Ali Alavian and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
Brother Ali, salam to you too, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, how are you, brother? Are you all right?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, brother. So, we know that the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, on different occasions, has commemorated, we can say, the position of the nurses and medical staff, especially during coronavirus. Those who have been killed on this way have been called as shaheed by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. But Brother Ali, let me ask you about the features of we can say a good and great nurse in Islam. What are the features according to also Ayatollah Khamenei has talked about many features, you know, about the good nurse. Enumerate some of them for us.
Actually, this is a hard job and tough job. I mean, it might not look so, but it is really a tough job, and it has lots of hardships. Physically and mentally, and actually they are under pressure, because from one side, no one can actually see exactly what you're doing there, and from the other side, the patient himself is expecting more because he's unable to do his own duties. So he's expecting more, but what he has to know that there are other patients as well. But since this, let's say, hardship of the work cannot be seen by the people, it's the time for us at least to ponder and think on these issues, that this job needs to be actually looked at very accurately as it is. Because from one side, even the family of the patient, they are expecting more of the care to be given to the patient while there is no one there in the hospital.
That's right.
Close to him, and the relatives even are not allowed to be in the hospital from the other side. So all in all, this is not an easy job to be done, but with lots of hardship. And this hardship brings some necessities to the to the nurses.
That's right.
They must be kind. They need to be kind to the patient. And being kind to the patient also is not, again, easy. Look, brother, the patient who all the patients are not same. Yes. Some of them have very
severe situation. That's right.
And helping them, and they are not. I mean, this is not the only patient that you have in the section.
Yes.
So there are others as well. So to be kind with all of them, it requires a big morale and a big, let's say, sense of humanity, if I can call it. And while you might also, as a person, have some other problems in your house or in your family as well, but you need, while you are coming here, you have to forget all of them and be kind again to this group of people who are in need of you.
And the bravery that these staff showed during Corona pandemic was really outstanding.
Yeah, some of them were away from their families.
Yeah, away for so many days, maybe 2-3 months away from the family. I've seen the pictures in Iran in the hospitals that even the birthday anniversary for the father who was, or the mother was the nurse, was held behind the blocks. I mean, behind the doors, closed doors.
Yeah.
The families on one side and the others on the other side. Okay, like now we are in the studio. And the your sound staff are behind in the control room.
It's just like ICU, like patients inside the ICU. Outside, they're watching the patient.
Yes, brother. But this was really great. And then themselves, you know, at the very beginning, they were themselves exposed to this disease without doing it.
Very true.
Because the biological and the genetic tests were not done yet.
And even more about the importance of their job, it is a complementary, actually, action to the works and to the jobs of the doctors and physicians. Because in case the doctor even does the best of, let's say, treatment to the patient,
the
in
best
case
of
there
surgery,
is no nurse to take care of those, let's say, operation.
Yes.
And to actually to take care of the patient for that great event that happened on him, then it would be of no use.
The post-operation cares are very important.
So it is not even less important as what the doctors do.
That's right.
So it is, I think, to the same level of importance that the doctors do. In case they make a good decision to make a good treatment, they complement it.
Okay.
In the completion, like obviously, you know, when we're talking about the duty of nurses, we need to know why we say it's hard. Because in the other duties, when we say like the other jobs that we have, generally it's just a physical effort that we have.
Yes.
But for the nurses, it's more than the physical. Their spirit is also involved in it.
Yes.
Their ethical issue, obviously they have to take care of the ethical issues as well. Their morale should be high. They must be spiritually strong. psychologically strong. Obviously, you know, if a person passes away in front of them, they have to control themselves, obviously.
That's
it's
right.
It's very hard for a normal person to bear that. And sometimes, obviously, during operation or maybe during something like the different cases, obviously, you know, when in emergency, the patients, they come, there's different type of like emergencies, the patients. Some have come because of the accident. Some have come because of the, I don't know, fight or the other things, the injuries, or maybe there are other cases. So they must, like, obviously, they are putting their whole, we can say, like, their whole self is involved. It's just the body.
They spend from the very spirituality of themselves too, especially during pandemic when we see the believing nurses in the Muslim communities and look at the pictures, you know, on the website. You can find that they did everything, but at the same time they are reciting du'as.
For the
sick people over there, themselves and for the sick people over there, because they find this channel now, we can say, more useful. And this coronavirus, I think, had some lessons for us.
It has.
I mean,
it had
some lessons, especially for the, we can say, for people. Because before that, maybe we looked at the nurses and the medical staff. Okay, they are doing their jobs. They are paid for that. They are paid to take care of us. But now we see something greater is happening over there. The sacrifice that they have been made is highlighted now, and this coronavirus had a lesson in this regard, Brother Ali, isn't it?
How much do you want to pay a person to make him kind to a patient with that situation?
Especially in this
while
disease,
your own life is in danger. But you actually are turning around him like an angel and serving him or her and helping her or him. And this is, I think, in saying it, it's not that difficult. But when in practice, it shows itself.
Okay.
I have been saying that they are actually able to even revive some of the patients.
Yes.
I mean, to give life back to a patient, the one who has actually, who is about to die, but they actually let him stay more. Let him stay alive more. And this is the art of a nurse that helps actually the patient and those who are involved with a sort of disease to get back to life. And this is also a great service to humanity. And we have even in Quran when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that if you save a life, it's as if you have saved the whole world.
That's right.
To the extent that they are able, they do their job and they help people. And definitely it will be, we as human beings are not able to thank them for what they're doing, but but they are not actually ignored in presence of God, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will reward them for this great job that they are doing.
Another important case, Sayyid Mohsen, is, you know, in Iran, Iran was the first country, Islamic Republic of Iran, was the first country who called those nurses and the medical staff killed on this way, I mean, during corona pandemic virus, as shaheed and martyr. How much do you think this action itself is good? Because also leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, referred to these great men and women as shaheed. How much do you think giving it religious color will help? Because the nurses and the medical staff in the world, now we want to make a role model for the for the world.
Well,
out of ourselves, how much do you think?
First thing is that we are totally living in a religious environment.
Okay.
Because there is a creator who has created us, and we all must live our life for a divine cause.
Okay.
If we are not living for a divine cause, then this life is in vain. Obviously, we will not get to the perfection or to the place where we need to go. So the whole our whole life from our birth till death is divine. It should be because of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's for the it must be for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, in this path, obviously whoever works in the path of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, because in the Quran Allah says fi sabilillah. The word fi sabilillah has a literal meaning and a technical meaning.
Yes.
In some cases, we refer towards the technical meaning, which means like taking a sword or a gun and go to the battlefield. That's one of the meanings.
Yes.
Whereas we also know that the Prophet ﷺ said, like the big jihad is to fight against your nafs, against yourself, against your wishes. And you need to obviously
Against your belongings, that's right.
Against your belongings, you have to control yourself.
Yes.
Now, what we see is obviously amongst all the jobs that are done in the world, the nurse, being a nurse, is the hardest job. Mm-hmm. And it's a sacred job. That's what we said, like divine. It's a divine and sacred job. Yes. Why? Because this person is obviously is involved with its spirit, with its psychology, with its, we can say, like ethics, moral, with its emotions.
Yes.
It's all over there.
Yeah.
When this person is working. And obviously, when they are working for the divine cause, for the sake of saving a person's life, if they lose their life, it is like being a martyr. Don't we have a hadith or narrations in which, for example, from Hazrat Masuma Salamu Alayha, we have a hadith, "Man mata ala hubbi ali Muhammad mata shahida." Whoever dies in the love of Ahlul Bayt, they died like a martyr.
That's right.
They're shaheed, mata shahida.
Yes.
They're like a martyr.
Okay.
So these people who have the love of Ahlul Bayt, number one. Number two, they're saving the lives of the mu'mineen,
yes,
the believers.
Yes.
Number three, obviously, they're doing this for a divine cause.
Yes.
For the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Mm-hmm. All these things, when you add all these things, definitely, if we call them as a martyr,
yes,
this is a very little thing that we have given them.
Yeah, and how
a
much
very
religion,
little title that we could give them.
Yes,
by saying that these are martyr,
yeah.
And it's not like making something religious. We are inside the religious.
Yes, and during the pandemic, during the corona pandemic, the searches have shown that we can say, as you said, emotional and psychological encouragements done have helped the sick people in order to revive. And one of the things that can be used
is
religion.
Share,
we got about 1 minute.
Experience.
We got about 1 minute.
You know, regarding the emotion and the psychological, one of our family members, she's an old lady, she's almost 60 years old, she got corona. And her husband, he did not tell her, like, you have corona. And he said, like, you got a TB. And she was thinking like she was getting treated for the TB in the hospital.
Oh.
And because she had, she was old, that's why they're putting this, they're giving her oxygen and all those things. And when she got cured, after 1 week, they told her that you had corona.
Oh.
And at that time, she started to cry. If I could knew, if you told me at that time when I had...
Yes.
I would definitely die.
Now compare it with the nursing staff who know what they're doing with all these masks. And you know, really, it's really intolerable because I have nurses, my relatives, with these clothes on, with these masks on, breathing is very difficult, sweating all, we can say, of the skin. And it's really difficult, especially during the summer in the hot weather.
This is the same word, brother, but in the battlefield has changed. So in case they are
cold... You're looking at it as a battlefield, brother, isn't it?
Look, if they are called as martyr or shaheed, I think it is the exact name that can be put.
Okay.
Because what a shaheed is doing, the shaheed with a pure intention and with a pure, let's say, belief in God, for the sake of
sacrifices himself
to serve others, right?
That's right.
This is the same thing that they are doing.
Okay.
Even if, for example, when we are going to our job and we are doing our work, we are doing our job and we are going to our workplace with the intention of doing it for the sake of God, we are doing jihad.
Okay.
So a person, even in that state, has got killed, then he's known to.
Very good. Let me quote as the final remark for today's program a sentence. It is a narration that has been said by Ayatollah Khamenei in one of his speeches, that a person who attends to a patient is like a person who swims in divine mercy. Thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi and Brother Ali Alavian for your presence. It was very kind of you. We really admire all the efforts of the nursing staff and the medical staff, especially during coronavirus pandemic, all around the world, whether it be Muslims or non-Muslims. They are all considered as the main sacrifices in this way, and we really appreciate what they do all across the world. May Allah bless them all, and may Allah give them the best rewards in the other world and here in this world. Dear audience, thank you very much. Do not forget to read out the seventh dua of Sahifa Sajjadiyah. This has been recommended by all our leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, and all the religious authorities. It is really helpful, and spiritually speaking, it will really boost you every day. Visit our website too, parstoday.com/yankalavislampage. Our YouTube page is Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Sometimes I can't see where I'm supposed to go. Sometimes I speed up when I should take it slow. But through all my hard times, when I lose my way, you're concealing my mistakes, yeah. I know you're always by my side, never turning out your light. When I need you most, your stars will shine. When I'm out there in the darkest place, worn and tired, I can still see you illuminate all my skies. When it feels like I've fallen too far from you, they you are guiding me through. Whenever I feel down, you can lift me up, turning my life around with your love. No matter how rough it gets, I can wear a smile, 'cause your mercy never dries, yeah.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The failure to meaningfully decarcerate jails and prisons in the U.S. has led to increased cases in the community, as the staff travel between work and their home communities on a daily basis. Between California, Florida, and Texas, mass incarceration contributed to a 250,000 new COVID cases, or 20% of new cases in these states from May 1st to August 1st. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Victoria Law Ryder. This article is published under the heading, U.S. states say they are decarcerating, yet one in five prisoners has had COVID. Here's the details of this article.
On December 10th, nearly 9 months after the coronavirus exploded across the United States of America, Presence reported 276,235 confirmed COVID cases, a rate more than four times as high as that among the general public. One in five prisoners has had COVID-19. Prisons have had at least 1,738 deaths from COVID. And the impacts of incarceration-related COVID outbreaks extend beyond the jail walls. Guards and others traveling in and out of prisons have contributed to community spread. A new report by the Prison Policy Initiative estimated that in the summer alone, prisons and jails contributed to more than 500,000, or roughly 13% of additional COVID-19 cases nationwide. From the start of the pandemic, public health and medical officials warned that incarcerated people were uniquely vulnerable to COVID and its most severe complications. Many people enter prison with a raft of pre-existing health conditions. Inside the prison, they are unable to physically distance from each other or adhere to other Center for Disease Control and Prevention guidelines, such as frequent hand washing, using alcohol-based sanitizers, or wearing masks. Many prisons did not issue masks for weeks, forcing incarcerated people to risk sanctions when they improvised masks from other pieces of clothing. Experts' predictions quickly came true as several jails and prisons emerged as the nation's top hotspots. Meanwhile, some states such as Indiana have resisted implementing early release policies. Furthermore, population reductions have not been enough to stem the spread. California's prisons remain at 105% capacity. Of its 92,170 prisoners, 5,343 have active COVID cases and 93 have died. New York's prisons reported 120 new cases in early December, bringing its total to 1,959 cases among its 35,353 state prisoners. In Michigan, the numbers are even more stunning. With the help of the state's National Guard, the Department of Corrections tested all 34,000 remaining prisoners. As of December 17th, 19,710 have tested positive, with 6,727 active cases, and 104 have died, a dramatic increase from 3,944 cases and 68 deaths in June. Even more alarming, 115 people who had previously tested positive for COVID have tested positive for a second time. At its Gus Harrison Correctional Facility, over 72%, or 1,423 of the 1,455 incarcerated men tested positive, six have died. As the pandemic drags on and the threat of COVID transmission becomes a normalized reality, incarceration reductions are reversing. From March to July, the majority of 514 jails surveyed by the Prison Policy Initiative had reduced the number of people behind bars by an average of 26%. Since July, however, 77% of these same jails saw increases in their populations, a trend, says Prison Policy Initiative, suggesting that the early reforms instituted to mitigate COVID-19 have largely been abandoned. Some, such as the jails in Cook County, Illinois, and Jefferson, Louisiana, have managed to slightly surpass their pre-pandemic February populations. Others have seen dramatic increases. St. Lucie, Florida, for example, jailed 808 people in February. Throughout the pandemic, it has steadily increased its jail population to 1,332 people as of December 4th. Thank you.
state prison populations are also beginning to climb again. North Dakota's prison population, which decreased by 19% between January and May 2020, is starting to inch up. From October 8 to November 19, the state increased its prison population by 3%. By Halloween, its prisons saw a surge in COVID. 66 of its 600 incarcerated people, as well as 21 of approximately 200 staff members, tested positive. Prison intakes, previously halted in many states to prevent COVID exposure, have restarted. Each new arrival brings the potential for COVID to enter and explode throughout the prison. New arrivals are supposed to undergo 14 days of quarantine before mixing with the general population. But this is not always the case. In New York, for instance, when prison officials first converted Adirondack Correctional Facility into a prison for men ages 65 and older, men reported not being tested or quarantined upon arrival. Quarantine also didn't stop COVID from exploding at Rockville, the Indiana prison where Sarah Jo Pender is incarcerated. Our rooms are fenced in cubicles with 14 to 16 women per room, she explained. We live in bunk beds separated by 3 feet. Every 136 women share 2 bathrooms. The U.S. failure to meaningfully decarcerate jails and prisons has also led to increased cases in the community as staff travel between work and their home communities on a daily basis. Between California, Florida, and Texas, mass incarceration contributed to a 250,000 new COVID-19 cases, or 20% of new cases in these states from May 1st to August 1st. Despite its much-touted release of 22,148 people from prisons, the Prison Policy Initiative estimated that California's incarceration alone contributed 113,969 COVID cases, or 291 cases per 100,000 residents. In Indiana, where Pender and many other women wear their masks to bed in a desperate bid to avoid COVID, the state's insistence on keeping people in prison led to 6,879 additional cases, or nearly 104 per 100,000 residents. In Park County, where Rockville is located, 28% of residents tested positive. 20% of Rockville staff also tested positive. In Michigan, mass incarceration led to an additional 4,787 COVID-19 cases, or 48 per 100,000 residents throughout the state. That was what prompted the residents of Adrian, Michigan, the town where the Gus Harrison prison is located, to join family members and advocates during their December 11 protest, demanding the release of aging and medically vulnerable people.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.